What's up, United? How you doing? Good. Everybody's awake. I was hoping Mark would do a little dance for us. Does anybody know the name of the band, Step by Step? Does anybody know the name of that band? Can't think back to the 90s, New Kids on the Block. So it's like the One Direction of the 90s. So maybe even One Direction's a little too old for you. But my name's Tim. I'm the lead pastor here at United Church, and we're all about helping people connect to God. And we hope that our experience here this morning helps us to connect with God, maybe for the first time, or if not, just to go deeper with him this morning. And we're kicking off a new series titled When Life Gives You Lemons. If you haven't figured that out yet with the lemons on the stage, all the talk about lemon cars and so forth this morning. But I want to ask you, who here likes being outside? Who's an outdoors person? You like being outside? Who here likes it so much that you keep your windows open and you want the air to come in when it's nice out? You want the sunlight? Does anybody keep their windows open, pull their shades? I love that, but I'm really thankful for screens because at night when it gets dark and you have the lights on in your house, there's these little critters that try to get in that are outside. You don't want everything that's outside to come in, and they're called moths. Does anybody here like moths? No, I don't think I've ever met a person that likes moths. In fact, I was so interested in moths this week, I looked up what their purpose in life was because I was like, why did God create moths? And my friend Google helped me understand why moths were created by defining their existence as being the diet for other animals to live. I mean, imagine that your purpose in life is to be eaten. Well, that's what the purpose of a moth is in life. And then when I was reading a little bit about moths, I actually read a story about a moth that is much like a butterfly where it's a caterpillar that wraps itself up in a cocoon and it wrestles out of that cocoon when the spring comes. And there was a story of a lady who saw a moth just wrestling its way out of that cocoon and wanted to help it. So being the good-natured woman that she was, opened that cocoon shell up so that the moth could come out. If you know anything about moths, though, that destroyed the life of that moth. The very short existence that it already had in the first place was even shorter because the whole purpose of that process of getting out of the cocoon is to strengthen a moth's wings, and same with a butterfly, so that when they get out of the cocoon, they're able to fly. And because she ended that process, which might be a struggle and a strain and hard to watch, that moth's life was cut short. You see, the struggle is essential for a healthy life. That goes against what we think about in life. Like struggling, pain, we don't think that those things are helpful in life. In fact, if you're like me, you probably pray prayers like, God, keep me from struggle in life. Keep struggles away. Help there be no pain or suffering in my life. Please remove them when they come. Or maybe there's a struggle with this habit or a person that I'm enduring this relationship or going through a painful experience. We want those things to be removed, not to embrace them, but yet, I wonder if this series, When Life Gives You Lemons, if we can view the lemons of our life, the struggles and the adversities that we go through, more like that cocoon. And we need to go through them for a healthier existence in this life. And that's what we're going to talk about when life gives us lemons. It's not easy to think about. Sometimes when we think about trials and struggles in life, things just really stink. There's not easy answers to this topic of pain and suffering. And so we're going to dive into a story in the Bible, one of the most documented characters in the Bible, in the book of Genesis. So if you have a Bible with you and you grab one from the back, you can go ahead and open up to just the very first book. It's called Genesis, and we're going to be in chapter 37 there. And we're going to be reading about a guy named Joseph. And for the next 3 weeks, we're going to go through the story of Joseph to help us understand what are we supposed to think and do when life gives us lemons, when there's things that are hard and challenging in our life, how do we process that? And there's this phrase that comes up over and over and over again in Joseph's life, and I'm going to pull it out of the Bible. It's in chapter 39. I'm just going to start by reading this phrase to you. It says, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor. I mean, when you look at this statement here, the Lord was with him, showed him kindness and granted him favor, to me that says like, wow, he was really well off. He was prospering. Things were going great for him. I think about, you know, just somebody's story that's too good to be true. You know, everything they touch turns to gold. Everything goes well. I think of a new business owner that might be opening up a business and, you know, they open up their doors and their business takes off and they start opening up other locations and you get to sit with them and maybe interview them or hear their story and you say, what's the secret to your success? And they're like, I don't know. We just opened the doors and people came and you're kind of like, man, I wish my life was that. that easy. I wish just prosperity happened to me, just like that. Just like this phrase about this guy, Joseph. But the reality is, this is more of the end of his story. When we see Joseph later in life, he is prospering in that way because there were some things that he had to go through in his life to get there. It wasn't always easy for him. And the story behind the story of even success in the lives of people in our world isn't always an easy story. There's a lot of lemons that come up. And Joseph's story kind of ends with him saving the lives literally of thousands of people, being one of the most influential people and having a ton of resources at his disposal. And so he ends up prosperous, but there's a lot of lemons he goes through to get there. And we're not going to look at his story to hope that we have an ending in life like his, where we just have tons of stuff and prospering with affluence. We're going to look at his story to look at principles of how we think about God. Because Joseph's example isn't just about prosperity, it's about how to think about God through the lemons of life. See, the lemons for us, I think, come in two forms. The first form is things that just really stink, things that are really hard, things that are really challenging. And we're not going to minimize those things in this life. Sicknesses, disease, suffering, death, things that are just incredibly hard to deal with, to think through, to process. And we're not going to have a tagline on this series, "When life gives you lemons, just make lemonade." That's really corny and it's not biblical. It's not that easy. When life gives you lemons, they really stink. And we're going to see that in Joseph's life, and we're going to acknowledge the real pain and suffering. But sometimes the lemons in our life are our own fault. And it's our own fault because of this game we called the comparison game, where we go on to Facebook or social media or wherever it is that we read for news sources and follow with people's lives, and we see the headlines of their life, but we always see the good things in their life, right? We see the high moments. Nobody's posting the low moments of life on their social media feed. I mean, churches, think about going to a church website. If you look at our church website, there's a lot of happy people. We don't show pictures of like married couples wanting to get divorced in a counseling session. Like that's not the reality of what businesses or churches put on their website. That's not the reality of what we put on our personal profiles for social media. We put the highs, and the reality of when life gives us lemons, we compare our low moments of life to the high moments of other people's lives. And we just think our life stinks in comparison to somebody else. And we're our own worst enemy at times. And Joseph's story helps steady us a little bit. Helps us see, you know what? Even people that are doing well in life have things that are really hard to go through. And so with that said, let's just go through his story. If you're in the Bible and you're in chapter 37 of Genesis, we're just going to start there right in verse 2. And you're going to see a bunch of people introduced right away in Joseph's story. It's not just him. He is the main character here. But there's his dad. And his dad's name is Jacob. He has two names, Jacob and Israel. So we're going to see these two names used both this morning as we read through Joseph's story. But his dad didn't have a great father influence, and because of that, he wasn't a great father, and we learn that he wasn't a great father from this just first opening statement. It says, this account of Jacob's family line, Joseph was a young man of 17, was tending flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, and his father's wives. And so we're introduced to a scene right away where it's not this Joseph and his mom and dad. There's a couple moms in the story here, and Bilhah and Zilpah are actually servants of the moms of Rachel and Leah. And so there's a lot of moms. We don't have to sort through all of them, but Joseph's mom was Rachel, and that was Jacob's favorite wife. This is his favorite woman to be with, and he loved her, and because she was infertile for a number of years, when Joseph finally came along in his old age, he was really excited to have his son. And Joseph was his father's favorite son of 12 sons. Now imagine how that sat with his other siblings. It was kind of obvious, and here's why. The story goes on. It says, now Israel, Jacob, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. Kind of like a miracle baby. And he made an ornate robe for him. Anybody here ever see Joseph in the amazing Technicolor dream coat? That story comes from this part of the Bible. And because he had this colored robe, which there wasn't a lot of colored clothing back then. It was really expensive to have colored clothing. And not only was it a colored piece of clothing, but it was ornate in terms of it had long sleeves. Joseph was a little bit more of a homebody than his brothers. If you had long sleeves, that meant you stayed home because the guys that were working in the field all the time had short sleeves on their clothing. And so we see from Joseph, he's favored with this robe. He's the favorite son because of who his mom is. And it goes on to say that his brothers saw their father loved Joseph more than any other because of these things, and they hated him. This is how much they hated him. Check out this phrase. They couldn't speak a kind word to him. Do you ever have anybody in your life that just, they couldn't bring themselves to say something nice to you or something kind to you? Imagine 11 of them, and you live with them. That's Joseph's life. They could never say one kind word to him. They hated him that much. And you know what? He didn't help the situation at all. Like, check out this next part of the story. Joseph has a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. Well, what was fascinating about this dream that they would hate him? He says to them, listen to this dream that I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood up while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. Like, Joseph's all excited to tell them this dream, but he doesn't have a lot of social graces and common sense. Like, you don't tell that dream to your siblings. Like, hey, my sheaf is the one that's standing and yours are bowing down to me. There's a lot implied in this, and they even read into it and they say, do you intend to reign over us? Are you actually going to rule over us? And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. As if they didn't hate him enough, they hate him even more now because he goes around telling this dream where they already know he's the favorite son, but now he's feeding it even more. Like, not only am I dad's favorite, you're going to worship me. You're going to bow down to me. He's not like saying those things, but his dream implies all of that. So you think he might learn his lesson, maybe some of the social cues or the nonverbals that he picks up from his brothers, but he doesn't because he has a second dream and he includes mom and dad in on this. Like, hey, mom and dad, come listen to this other dream that I had. And he goes on to tell them about this dream that says, and I had another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. How many brothers does Joseph have? 11. Sun and the moon, mom and dad. You know, he's not helping his cause at all. If he wants to be liked by his family, Jacob, his dad, kind of pulls him inside and says, hey, Joey, listen up, buddy. Why don't you cool down with these dreams? Like, I'm not going to bow down to you. You know, maybe these other guys will, but I'm not. And he's trying to pull him aside and say, calm down a little bit here. And so what he does, he creates a little bit of a space between the siblings. Joseph stays home, of course, in his ornate robe, and his brothers go out to work in the field. And when they go out to work in the field, it's not like the backyard. They go like miles away. And Joseph needs to go bring them some supplies. And Jacob, his father, as the story moves on, says, hey, can you bring some supplies, lunch, and food, so forth, to your brothers that are working out in the field? And Joseph goes to give his brothers some reinforcement in this way. And they see him coming from a distance. And why do we know they can see him from a distance? It's because this robe, it stands out. And he's far enough away that they're able to plot something. And this is what happens as they see him coming. They say, hey, here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. They don't like his dreams. Dreams are something that are going to pop up every week here in this When Life Gives Us Lemons series in a unique way each week. And this week, the dreams pop up because they don't like his dreams. And they say, they're making fun of him, and they say, hey, let's kill him. Throw him into the cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him, and then we'll see what comes of his dreams. They're pretty angry with him, aren't they? They don't like their brother so much so. I mean, this is like something that you're going to watch on 2020 or Dateline at night. This is like premeditated murder. Like, if you're familiar with the story, sometimes you just read past this like, oh yeah, it's just part of the story. Like, hold on a second. His brothers are planning to kill him. Talk about a life giving you a lemon. That is serious animosity and bitterness. And so one of the brothers kind of wisens up and says, you know what, let's not kill him. Let's just throw him into the cistern and leave him there. An empty cistern, there's no water. It's not just like a little hole in the ground. It's a huge hole in the ground, the middle of nowhere. And he gets thrown into this cistern after he gets beat up, his robe torn off of him by his brothers. And Joseph is now alone in this big hole in the ground, in the middle of nowhere. 11 of his family members threw him there, and they're going to leave him. They're going to leave him for dead. Maybe somebody will find him, but who knows, and who really cares? He's in a pit. The thing about Joseph's dreams is they are a gift from God to him. He was actually a really good dreamer, and he was pretty accurate, and so he believed his dreams were from God. And so in this moment, it's not just like, hey, my brothers threw me in this pit, but what is God doing? Because I thought God had bigger plans for my life. And I think we can relate to Joseph. Maybe there's times in our life where we feel like we're in the pit, where the expectations of our life don't line up with the experience of our life. And we're wondering, God, where are you at? What are you doing? Do you even care? I mean, I can't imagine what Joseph is going through here in this empty hole in the ground. But the lesson that we can learn from him and see from him is when our expectations in life don't line up with our experience of life, we become discouraged. And so it's kind of like this part of the self-inflicted lemons, that we have these expectations, things don't go that way, and so we get easily discouraged. And maybe that's been part of your story in life. Maybe there's something that you looked forward to. Maybe you longed to be a parent and parenting finally came for you and you realized, wow, this isn't all fun and games. Yeah, those family pictures come out in Christmas time, but to get to that moment, it's like yelling and screaming. You will be happy right now because people will see a happy family. And you know that that beautiful picture, there was like 20 minutes of angst to actually get there if you've ever seen a family get a photo before. Maybe other unexpected things have come in life your way. Sickness is a huge thing that I've seen, we've experienced in our family. And when there's a sickness that comes, and it's not just one person, but one person in the family, it affects everybody. And the more serious that it is, it derails the plans that families have, that friend networks have, to hang out together, to enjoy life together. It's like, no, we're going to hang out at the hospital this weekend instead of go to the amusement park. We're not going on summer vacation this year because we're going to be stuck home because of this sickness that is so debilitating. It's entirely changed our life. And in those moments, we are in the pit. And there's tons of different types of moments, of pit moments for us, where we have questions about, where are you at, God? What are you doing? Why are you doing this? And oftentimes when we feel like those questions aren't being answered, then they become accusations. God, you're not here. You're not with me. You don't care about me. You're against me. So how does Joseph's story help us? Because right now all we can see is empathy. Like, hey, we can empathize with being in that pit, so to speak. Well, if we go on in Joseph's story, we're going to check out what happens next. Because his brothers come to their senses and even decide not to kill Joseph or leave him for dead. They change their mind. They have a little conversation. They say, let's get something out of this. And they see a caravan of people coming down the road. And they say, let's sell him to this group of people. And it's one of the first instances of human trafficking in the Bible, where they get 20 shekels, which isn't a lot of money. So they weren't bargaining. They just wanted to get something for the life of their brother. And Joseph is off to be a slave. And he's sold into a house of a man named Potiphar. This guy named Potiphar, if you're not familiar with the story, is a high-ranking military official, a lot of notoriety and looked up to by a lot of people. And Joseph becomes one of his servants in his house. So he's sold off to this guy. And as he's a servant in his house, he actually falls into the good graces of Potiphar. Potiphar loves him. He's favored by him. He moves up in the ranks, climbs the career ladder, so to speak, in this experience. And it's an amazing situation for him because he goes all of a sudden from being a favored son from the pit to the pit to a palace. So it's like a roller coaster ride of life for Joseph, and it's going to continue to be for the next 2 weeks. And where he's at right now is at a high, but it doesn't last very long because not only is God with him, because the Bible talks about, hey, even here in Genesis 39 verse 2, the Lord was with him and he prospered. That's kind of the definition of his time with Potiphar. But it wasn't only God who was with him. Somebody else wanted to be with him. It was Potiphar's wife. And she wanted to get with Joseph because her husband was out working a lot and Joseph was a good-looking young man. And so she corners him, grabs his cloak, and Joseph didn't want to have anything to do with that situation. He runs away. But you have a woman here who has the clothes of a man. And what is she going to say when other people find his clothes in her hand or her possession? And so she screams out to her servants and makes up a story that he came onto her and he gets thrown into prison because of her story. You see, these robes and cloaks don't go well for Joseph. He should just walk around naked probably. But he's always getting into trouble because of what he's wearing, or not wearing in this case, because Potiphar's wife took it. And again, he's in a pit. And you have to wonder, what is going on in Joseph's life? And what is most fascinating about the story of Joseph is what the author writes in this next section. This is the most important part of the morning. And it says this verse, as Joseph is in a prison. It says, while he was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor. I started with this verse at the very beginning of the message, talking about those people that feel like life has everything going their way. But this doesn't describe Joseph's situation. Life isn't going his way, but yet this is what God describes his life as, saying the Lord is with him, showing him kindness, granting him favor. See, often we connect the favor of God or the kindness of God or the fact that God is with us with prospering, and yet Joseph is here in prison with not a single dollar. He doesn't have a single possession. His friends have betrayed him. His boss fired him and hates him, and he has nothing, and yet it's said of him, God's with him. Yet when the lemons in our life come, the car breaks down, we're not jumping around saying God is good to us. When we get laid off or lose that job, we're not feeling very favored by God in that moment, are we? We're not, when our friends ditch us, we don't feel like, oh, God's with us. I feel very, put together. No, we feel alone. And we ask God questions like, where are you at? See, here's the truth that we need to pull from this story this morning is the fact that the kindness and favor of God doesn't depend on our circumstances being all good. The kindness and favor of God exists for us at all times. In the highs and lows of this roller coaster ride in life, that the lemons in life that we get. Because we can judge God's presence by prosperity, like things are going well, God's favor rests on us. People can't even talk that way. But the reality is God defines Joseph's life in the good and bad moments by saying the Lord was with him. This phrase is really important for us to even dig into even more, because in that culture, to say that the Lord was with you was pretty significant, because the people of that day and age would have a God that was the God of Israel or the God of this country or the God of that country. And when they would travel, their God wouldn't go with them. But Joseph's God was different, because as he went from one country to the next country, God was with him. There was something different about his God. People noticed that his God was with him. And so it was a God who went from country to country. I lived in New Jersey for 10 years, and the God of New Jersey is totally different than the God of Maryland. He's not kind up there. He's much kinder here. Totally kidding, and that sounds ridiculous, but that's the way people would think about God. But God is not just a geographical phrase that he's with us all the time, but he's also with us in every situation. Circumstantially and geographically, God is with us all the time. The same God who was with Joseph when he got his robe stripped off of him and sold into slavery and found himself in a palace and then he found himself in a prison is the same God who's with us. Do you believe that your God travels with you? Not just, in your car or on vacation, but every situation that you face. Do you believe that your God is with you? Do you believe that your God is for you? The God that we worship here at United Church through Jesus Christ is a God who is for us and with us and shows us favor. Even when we feel and experience loneliness, despair, depression, the fact of the matter is that God is with us and he's good and he's kind. I would have a friend that would often share this phrase, I just need to truth it. He was this an Italian guy that would get fired up about life pretty easily. He struggled with depression a lot, and so just smaller things in life that other people might be more steady in processing, it would throw him for a loop significantly. And one of the things that helped him get through those would just say, I just need to truth it, meaning this. Like, it's like he's angry at somebody and he's like, I just don't want to have anything to do with them, but I just need to truth it. Or I feel alone in this. Oh, I just need to truth it. And he's saying that I just need to understand what's true about God and have that truth paint the reality of my life. Because without God, I have a very bleak understanding of life. But with God, things change. My perspective gets informed better. When I go through these circumstances and I understand that God's with me and for me, it changes things. I need to truth it. And he would truth it with different verses from the Bible. And a couple that he would truth it with, Romans 8:28 where we sang this earlier, all things are working for my good. It says, and we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him. And he would just truth it, like, hey, that's true about God. In all things, God's working for my good. Remember how we talked about that moth that's struggling to get out of that cocoon and, you know, not to free it right away. Sometimes God keeps us in that cocoon longer than we want, but he's strengthening us. He's doing something in us. When life gives us lemons, do you believe that? That God's doing something. He's working all things for our good. He's intentional. That's what we sang this morning. We sing truth too. Another phrase he would go to is, the Lord himself goes before you and he will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Don't be discouraged. You ever go through a time in life where you just can't see the light at the end of the tunnel? How is this going to work? You know, that bill, how is that going to be paid? Or this business decision, I don't know. You're stepping out in faith or you're just completely confused in life. I don't know how I'm going to pass this class or how I'm going to make it to college. And you're just so confused. You don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. Well, right here it says, truth it. God goes before you. He's going to be with you. He's going to help you. You don't have to see the light. Just take a step in that direction with a God who is with you and in goodness and favor towards you. See, more than any dose of a prescribed drug or even an illegal drug or a counseling session or a self-help book, maybe what we need is a dose of truth. A dose of the fact that God is a good God who's in control of all things working for our good. Do you need the truth this morning? That's what we learn from Joseph. And that's what I learned from a friend of mine here at United, whose name is Alan. And I want to introduce you to Alan this morning. And I want you to hear his Joseph-like story as he talks about some of the things he went through in life and how he worked through that. So can we welcome Alan to the stage to hear his story this morning? Thanks for coming, Alan. Appreciate it. Now, Alan, you have another name that you are called as well. Can you tell us your other name? Is that Mike working?
Yes.
Yeah, you're good.
I'm called Alan G. G is my last name, but I often go with G because of my previous jobs and everything. Everybody knows me as G. And if you call me G, thumbs up.
Cool. So, Alan, tell us a little bit about your story, where did it start, and give us the backdrop.
All right, I am from a very small village in Cameroon called Isu. I was born into a polygamous family. My dad had three wives. My mom is the youngest, and I am the youngest son. But my story is way different from that of Joseph. I am married to an amazing woman, Candida, who's sitting over there. My younger sister, Felicia, with her husband, Paul. I have my mother-in-law, the whole family is right there. You know, Denisha. So I'm here. But before being here, I grew up in Isu, went to school, went to university, studied a degree in biochemistry. So when I graduated from a university, I got a first job in a factory. You know, we made yogurt. But I was just living my life in Cameroon, you know, as a young man. But my older sister, who is based in the U.S., has been a nurse for about 17 years. But she always wanted me to come out here and study pharmacy. So she went ahead and, you know, got me admission into Southern Texas University and paid the tuition and everything. I got a visa to travel to the United States. I left Cameroon. The ticket that we bought it through British Airways, and we're transiting through Nigeria to London, then the United States. So when I left Cameroon, I landed in Nigeria. And the weather was not good, so they canceled the flight and said we would have to sleep over and leave Nigeria the next day. At the airport, we're checking out. The security officer took my passport and looked at it, but never gave it back to me. So I'm standing there, I'm like, where's my passport? Let me, you know, he said, I gave it to you. I'm like, no, you didn't give me my passport. I need my passport. So we went back and forth, and you know, the police came in, they searched everywhere. Apparently, he took my passport and handed it to some, you know, his friends, and it was gone. So the airlines took me to a hotel in Lagos. I slept that night over, and they called me the next day. They said they couldn't find the passport, but the flight had to go on. They had to leave me behind. And I'm stuck in this country, didn't know anybody, had no identification, because the only identification I had was my passport. I told the hotel manager, I said, can I stay in the hotel until all this is sorted out? Maybe I can get a new passport and stuff. He said, no, you cannot stay here unless you pay. I said, okay, I'm gonna try to get some money for you from the US. I called my family in America. They said they were willing to send money, but how am I gonna receive it if I don't have any identification? So I told the manager, I said, can they send you the money to you just so you can receive it and allow me stay? He said, no, he can't receive money because he doesn't know where it's coming from. He doesn't wanna go to jail. And that I have to leave. I honestly didn't know where I was going to in a strange land. So I went into my room, got my stroller, came out, stood at the hallway, the hotel hallway, the very long hallway, looked at the left, right. It was quiet. It was just me and the manager standing right there. He's just waiting for me to leave. I couldn't take a step. I just broke down on the hallway and I cried. In my tears, I prayed. I said, God, if you're truly up there, please come. So he said, you need to leave. Go. So I, you know, reluctantly carried my stuff, went down to the lobby, sat out there and just with my head bowed on the table. And this young man came around, David and Patrick, and they looked at me and they said, man, you look like you have the entire world on your shoulders. What's going on? I just looked at them and shook my head. I didn't even want to share with them because I didn't trust anybody in Nigeria. But they said, well, that's fine. You know, we'll leave. And they started walking away and suddenly remembered that I prayed. So I said, hey, guys, look, this is my story. So they sat down and I shared my story. They said, you know, we are four of us in the bedroom. We share one single bedroom and you can come and pass the night with us in that bedroom until you figure your stuff out. So I'm here, didn't know what I was getting into. And I followed these guys into the city with no clue of where I was. While I was in that room, they woke up Saturday in the morning and they were praying around 4 a.m. They were screaming, singing, and praising to God.
What time was that again? 4 a.m.?
4 a.m. in the morning. So praying and like... So me, from a Catholic background... My sisters, my mom, they were all here. They were like, if you don't go back to Cameroon, don't call us. Because you're going to join these churches where they cry and they just, you're going to be useless. So you have to go back home and go back to the Catholic Church. I said, I can't go back home. I don't have any documentation to travel. I have to get a new passport. So these guys were praying. They woke me out just... I couldn't pray. I just started crying. They prayed, and in the morning I said, hey, can you take me to your church? They said, we've not been to church in 3 months. And I said, you guys pray like this, and you've not been to church in 3 months? So they're like, they're too busy. They're this. I'm like, please, one person, please take me to your church. And I was saying this not because I was excited to go to the church, but I wanted to know somebody outside their circle. I just wanted to know somebody else that knew them. So Patrick volunteered to take me to church on Sunday. The Sunday morning we went to church. I went and sat all the way in the back, just watching, and the pastor preached. At the end of the service, he said, if there's anybody in the church that wants to talk to me, you can come and talk to me. So I was the first in the line, standing right there, and I spoke to him, and the great guy, Pastor Franklin, he said, you know, funny enough, I had a dream that you were coming. I'm like, no, you did not, because this is not a good coming. So, but I ended up staying in the church, volunteering. Before this, when I was traveling, I gave everything away because I knew I was coming to stay in the U.S. I was engaged before leaving Cameroon, not to that beautiful lady over there, to somebody else. I gave everything. So I had 2 pairs of jeans, 2 shirts, and a pair of shoes. So while in Nigeria volunteering, if For 3 to 6 months, I had just that. So the airlines were supposed to refund my ticket. They said it would take 3 months. And I can only get it in Nigeria. I was stuck. I had to stay. And when I got the ticket refund, my sister was like, now you got the money, go home. And I had a passport from the Cameroon embassy. Go home. I said, I can't. If I go home, I'm going to just go back to who I used to be. Now I know Jesus. I want to stay and learn who he really is. And he said, well, if you want to stay in this country, in Nigeria, don't call us. You are on your own. One person that stayed in touch with me is my younger sister, T. She's not here, but she's also a nurse in Mercy. I was lost, but I had a church family. While I was in Lagos, you know, volunteering in the church, I spent that money, the refund they gave me, by paying, you know, the bus every day back and forth with my two shirts. I had to do laundry every other day. And when I ran out of money, and I told the pastor, I said, it's time for me to go now. And he said, no, it's time for you to be blessed. You have nothing. I remember this was around December, Christmas 24th, breaking. We were praying into the Christmas day, 25th. My fiance called me and broke up with me and said, you know, I don't know when you're ever going to make it to the U.S. We're done. So, long story short, I was assisting the pastor. I know I love to write. So I used to write his notes. He asked me. We're doing a church relocation project. So I was developing that project. And around the middle of the night, I could hear a voice that, like, you know, I felt it deep inside me to stop what I was doing and open a new Word document and write what I could do. So I opened a page and I wrote an entire, about 20 page of how to set up a yogurt factory. So my pastor wakes up in the morning, 6 a.m. for prayer, and I give him the big, you know, package. I said, this is what I wrote. He's like, you did this? We didn't show. I said, yes. He said, okay. So we prayed about it, and God being faithful, within 3 weeks, somebody sponsored that business proposal, and I became a CEO of a yogurt company. Yes. With my two shirts. So, within the same time, one of the actors in Nigeria had passed. So we went to the National Stadium for the funeral. And I was walking around. A young lady walked up to me and handed me her card. I said, please call me the next day. Now, the next day, I didn't want to call. My roommates were like, call her. You know, you don't know. That could be a shot for her. I'm like, I am not calling a female in Nigeria that I don't know. I am not doing that. So they're like, you have nothing to lose. Just call her. So when I called this lady, she had a modeling agency where, you know, she's like, just come out. Come. People pay to take pictures to model my company. You don't have to pay. Just come and take pictures, and we'll see what happens. I went and took pictures, and I got a first contract of 2 million naira in a communication company. It's just more like T-Mobile. So if you buy the calling card, it was my picture. Billboards in Nigeria, it was my picture. Two shirts, two pads. And I tried to get my company to get an FDA number so I can mass produce, but the government gave me a whole lot of runaround. They wanted me to bribe, and I couldn't get a headway through. And the lady who I was modeling for her company, you know, wanted us to get married. I guess she fell in love, but I was not ready. I said no. So she started cutting my checks. Instead of giving me, she always gave me like 50% of how much I made. So I told the pastor, I said, I need to go. And after prayer, he said, well, you can go. So I had a scholarship in Cyprus way before I ever left Cameroon.
Gee, hold on a second. How much time passed when all of that happened?
9 months.
Jeepers creepers.
9 months.
9 months.
Yes. So in 9 months, I said, you know, I have to leave. And I pulled that old scholarship documentation, and I called the school. I said, can I still make it? They were like, well, you're 1 year late. If we can do this, we can bring you, but you have to pay the second year out of pocket because now you've lost a year of the scholarship. I said, well, I'll take it. And I went to Cyprus. In Cyprus, studying business administration. Students were not allowed to work. All you had to do was just go to school, but you had to pay your bills and attend school. So the second year was not that easy. One thing that I really want to share that I experienced in Cyprus was that since students were not allowed to work, I went to volunteer in an old man's yard, you know, digging his gardens and stuff. And he connected me to the CEO who hired me in his business to work in his warehouse. As I'm working in his warehouse, his partner, on the other hand, did not like Mavro, which is, in other words, black people. He said, I have to leave the company or he will have to get out of the business. So I got fired. When I left, the guy who hired me, his son, while I was working there for like 6 months, I was kind of mentoring him. And I've poured in so much into his life that he told that, said, if this guy is leaving, then he's leaving too. And he was the guy that was going to take over the business. For the sake of the son, they said, you know, you can come back to work. I said, well, if I'm coming back, then I need a raise. And I did. I got it. You know, or with all that being said, my family, because then I would say I want to go to Bible college. My sister said, if you ever mention that again, don't, like, she's very, very hot lady. Is like, don't call me. Because she's, that's who I had in terms of sponsorship. And we were not in good terms for a long time. And I met this beautiful lady, Candy. We're talking, and eventually we got married, and now I'm here, two beautiful children. And my family, because of the faithfulness of God, we're all together. We do pray together, though I don't go to the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. They've accepted me because of the faithfulness of God.
Cool. That's great.
Thank you.
Can we thank you? That's like the 10-minute version of a 45-minute version story that could probably be turned into a movie of G's life. And what I love when I talk with G and hear his story and hear him talk about it, he doesn't like to talk about the challenges that he faced. I asked him to share a little bit of those challenges, but he doesn't like to dwell on that because he knows how good God has been to him in light of broken relationships with family, a fiance, poverty, having nothing to his name, in light of being a victim of racism, in light of multiple other things and the ups and downs of his life, even just within 9 months in Nigeria, as well as many years, he knows that God was with him. And the thing about this truth is it's not just a truth written in a book called the Bible. It was actually something lived out by God, where he came out of heaven to earth in the form of Jesus Christ, a real man. You see, one of the things that helps us to endure suffering is the reality that God suffered with us. Jesus had his own share of lemons in life. In fact, he asked God to take those lemons from him, and God said no. And he took those lemons in the form of dying on the cross for our sins. And we remember this most important, crucial truth, that God's not just with us theoretically, but through Jesus Christ. And we remember this in a specific way every week where we practice what we call communion. And we just pass around these little cups and with a cracker and a cup of juice. And it's a real tangible way to remember a real tangible truth of God's presence in the form of Jesus Christ. And we're going to close by just taking communion together today. And we're going to remember that God is with us through the ups and downs of our life, and that the favor of God and goodness of God is offered to every person this morning because of the work of Jesus Christ. And if this is the first time that you're hearing this or it's making sense to you, today could be the day where you place your faith in Jesus Christ. In 2 weeks, there's going to be some people that take the next step of being baptized. And there's going to be a baptism in 2 weeks. If you want to join and be baptized in 2 weeks to take that step. But today the step is just to have some time with God. And you can write all of those things on your connection card, but make sure something gets written on your heart this morning. And it's the truth that God cares for you and loves for you. And we're going to go ahead and pass communion at this time. And if you're comfortable taking communion, just go ahead and take that in your own time. If not, just go ahead and pass those trays along. And we're going to just spend some time reflecting on the stories that we've heard and the truth that we've heard about God together. And then we'll wrap up together. So ushers can go ahead and pass communion.